Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, it's John Dennis here with News Desk on Tuesday, August the 7th. Today, David Cameron's been accused of an arrogance by a wealthy donor who says he's not going to give any more money to the Conservative Party. In Surrey, animals are culled on a second farm after another suspected outbreak of foot and mouth disease. Also today, thousands of guns have been lost in Iraq by the Americans. It's feared that many of them are now being used by insurgents to attack US troops. And the residents of a town in Western Australia who say they've been poisoned by pollution from a mining works are being helped by Erin Brockovich. And if there's any justice here in the pod, Ross Taylor will be reviewing today's papers. Transport tycoon Sir Tom Cowie is one of the leading donors to the Tory party, but he's told The Guardian he's going to stop funding the Conservatives because he's fed up with the way David Cameron is leading the party. Westminster correspondent David Henke told me what Sir Tom said.
Sir Tom has basically said he's not giving any more money to the Conservative Party, and he's a big donor and everything else, actually. So he has really basically said he's not going to give any more money. He's fed up with David Cameron's attitude on grammar schools and also the fact that he feels he's rather a bit of an arrogant old Etonian when it comes to laying down policy.
What do you think he meant by saying that David Cameron had an arrogant old Etonian style of leadership?
Basically, I think he thinks they're a bit, to be quite honest, they're arrogant about the way they lay down policy. And the thing he's really mad about is the decision over grammar schools, where he decided, really, that because he's had a privileged education, he didn't seem to realise the value of ordinary people like himself, who came from really humble beginnings, being able to get on in life.
And he also didn't like David Cameron's trip to Rwanda in the middle of all the floods in Middle England.
He basically said, when I asked him about this, frankly, this is, I'm really cross about him going to happen. And he said, I said, because of the floods. He said, yes, precisely. I don't really think someone should leave the country and not care about his constituents. He really does feel rather strongly that Cameron actually is really no good as a leader.
Is this a big blow to Conservative Party finances?
Well, it's a serious blow because he's given $650,000 in the last 5 years, and that's a lot of money. I mean, and he's given it. He's obviously a pretty lifelong Conservative in the sense that he supported Hague, he supported Ian Duncan Smith, he especially supported Michael Howard. He gave him $500,000 for the general election. So, frankly, this is a blow if a long-standing Conservative, who actually is the life president of one of our biggest privatised bus and train operators, says, I don't want to fund them under David Cameron.
Will Sir Tom be joining Labour?
No, he's pretty angry about Labour. He says Gordon Brown's seizure of taxing of all the dividends on pensions has cost him £500 a week. And that all that has done is make him more angry with David Cameron. He thinks he should have jolly well protested much more loudly and had a go at Gordon for that. No, as far as I can see, the person he's most likely to support from now on with his finances is Prince Charles, because he wants to give lots of money to the Prince's Trust, which I gather he already supports, to help disadvantaged people set up their own businesses.
Now, Ros Taylor's here with a look at today's papers. Ros, the Times has got a story about Britain failing to offer asylum to Iraqi interpreters.
Yes, there are 91 Iraqi interpreters who've been helping the British in Basra. Of course, that puts them in great personal danger. They've got a certain amount of protection at the moment, but we can expect, I think, that when British troops leave, they will lose that. The Times says that they will probably be tortured and then executed, as has already happened to some of their colleagues. Now, a number of senior military staff in Iraq have written to the British government saying these people should be granted asylum given that all they've done for us, but the Home Office says no, they will just have to apply for asylum in Britain just like everybody else does.
Now, later in today's podcast, Rachel Williams will be telling us the latest developments with foot and mouth disease, but what's the Financial Times saying today about the economic impact of the disease?
It says that the impact will soon begin to kick in and be felt because, of course, no cattle, pigs and so on, are moving around the country. That means they can't be taken to market for slaughter. And, of course, the European Commission has imposed a ban on British meat at the moment. That won't be lifted for at least a month after we've given the all clear. And in terms of foreign exports, the situation is outside the EU, the situation is even worse, because once America and Japan have banned meat, they require at least 3 months after it's been declared free of infection before they will let the meat in. So with all those factors going on, the British farmers will soon be losing a lot of money.
There was a legal decision yesterday that environmental campaigners have been told that they can demonstrate at Heathrow Airport.
Yes, this is very good news for the Guardian's George Monbiot, the environmental campaigner and columnist. He urges Guardian readers to join him at the climate camp at Heathrow. This is a very important decision because the British Airports Authority tried to ban all the groups, all the members of the groups associated with this protest, which includes people, members who are of the RSPB, the National Trust, from a certain radius around Heathrow, and also from the Piccadilly line that goes into Heathrow. So it would have created an enormous amount of disruption just to enforce it. And George Monbiot says it's very important that we go along and not just exercise our right to protest, but also exercise our right to argue for a better environmental future.
And there's been a possible new lead in the hunt for Madeleine McCann. This is the three-year-old British girl who went missing earlier this year from a holiday resort in Portugal.
Could be a lead. Apparently British sniffer dogs have been sniffing around the apartment from which Madeleine McCann was abducted, and they found tiny spots of blood. We don't yet know who that blood belongs to or whether it's even related to the case, but tests are going on to find out.
And what are the papers saying today about why fat cats are fat?
They've got diabetes, apparently. Just as humans get diabetes if they eat badly and don't take enough exercise, so do cats. And the papers say that about 40,000 of Britain's 8 to 9 million felines probably have diabetes. Apparently neutered males, because they don't go out so much, they get all torpid, and Burmese cats are most at risk. And in fact, it may not help if you feed your cat better food, because then it will live longer and is more likely to fall sick anyway. But there's some advice from the Times vet. It says that you should introduce exercise gradually because you cannot force cats to exercise.
Has the Times got its own vet? Extraordinary. Well, the Daily Mail tells us today how it would have reported events in the 17th century.
This is the kind of thing all us long-term forced mail readers have been waiting for. The Mail comes up with a number of front pages from things like 1605, ye 511 plot foiled, and accompanied by the headline, size doth matter, how big can cod pieces go. We also have 1620, which is when the Mayflower left for America, of course. Asylum crisis deepens as pilgrims sail.
I suspect, of course, they'd have been harking back to saying how much better life was in the 16th century. But anyway, many thanks, Ros, and don't forget to subscribe to The Wrap. That's our daily email service, guardian.co.uk/wrap. An official report by the United States Government Accountability Office was sent to Congress last week. It says 110,000 AK-47 rifles, 80,000 pistols and 135,000 pieces of armour have been mislaid in Iraq by the Americans since the invasion in 2003. Ewan McCaskill's The Guardian's Washington correspondent, and he's on the line now. Ewan, how has the US managed to lose these weapons?
Well, the honest answer and the awful answer is that no one knows. The Americans themselves can't account for it. They lost track of these weapons. It means an enormous amount that they just don't know where they are. And you have to assume that a lot of them have gone to into the hands of the insurgency.
Has the multinational force now got its records in order?
I don't think so, because the body that carried this out, it's an official body. They did it on behalf of Congress. When they checked in January, they still weren't satisfied that the proper records were being kept. So it's got better, but they still can't account for them all.
And this is extremely embarrassing for George Bush, presumably.
Well, it's especially embarrassing because, you know, for almost all of this year, almost on a weekly basis, either Mr. Bush or Dick Cheney or someone else in the Bush administration or else, all of them together, keep claiming that one of the problems in Iraq is that the insurgents are being armed by the Iranians. And here we have evidence that, well, actually quite a lot of the weapons are coming from the Americans themselves to be used against American forces.
A separate story that I'd like to ask you about, Ewan, if I may. Afghanistan, the president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, is in Washington. He's met George Bush. What's come out of that?
Well, there's two things. One is, there's a real difference between them on Iran. Again, Bush keeps saying that Iran is interfering negatively in Afghanistan, supplying the Taliban, whereas Hamid Karzai said, well, actually, Iran's been quite helpful. So there's a real gap there.
Just one other story I'd also like to ask you about, Ewan, if that's not too much trouble. The British government today has said that it's formally requested the release of five British residents from Guantanamo Bay. What's the likely response going to be to that?
I mean, it's difficult to know. It could be that when Gordon Brown was here last week, some sort of backroom deal was being done. But the Americans have tended to be unwilling to release anyone they think is of any value to them. Keep promising they want to close Guantanamo down and release as many people as possible, but it very seldom happens.
Ewan, thanks very much. Meanwhile, in Edinburgh...
Hello!
I'm Brian Logan.
And I'm Lucy Porter.
And we're presenting The Heckle, The Guardian's daily comedy podcast from the Edinburgh Festival.
Oh yes, we'll be here every weekday for the whole 3 weeks.
We'll be bringing you top names in comedy, discovering new and up-and-coming talent, and bringing you sights, sounds and smells of the fringe experience.
Come here!
So join us every day for The Heckle. It's your festival fix.
Health and safety inspectors will tell ministers today what they think caused the outbreak of foot and mouth disease in Surrey. The European Union has banned British meat exports that will cost farmers £10 million a week. And a nationwide ban on the movement of animals may lead to a shortage of British meat by the end of this week. Meanwhile, there's been a second outbreak of the virus on a farm in Surrey. I asked The Guardian's Rachel Williams to tell us about it.
Well, this came to light last night. It was actually probably about 9:10, and a bit of a shock, really, after a day when I think people felt that, things were under control and farmers certainly were feeling sort of cautiously optimistic. Suddenly we had the news that there was a second suspected case within one of the protection zones which are set up in the aftermath of the first outbreak.
But it's not on the same farm as the first outbreak?
No, it's not. We don't know exactly where it is yet. One farmer this morning did speak about the fact that it's actually on his land, but it's not him that farms it, so it's actually a different farmer. And I think Debbie Reynolds, the chief veterinary officer, has said that it's within kilometres of the first site, but we don't know exactly where yet.
And what's happening to the animals on this farm?
I think there's around 100 cattle on that farm, and they are all being culled.
How are local farmers reacting to this?
Well, I spoke to one local farmer last night, Angus Stovold, who farms Pedigree Aberdeen Angus cattle in the area. His farm's actually in the surveillance zone, which is the bigger zone around the two protection zones, but he actually farms cattle in the protection zone. And he said farmers there are obviously really quite dismayed by this news of the second outbreak, because they were hoping that they might be able to get through this with, tough biosecurity measures and really being very vigilant, and then suddenly a second outbreak opens.
Now, the Health and Safety Executive are carrying out an investigation into this. They'll be reporting later today. They're looking at a theory that flooding may be to blame for this outbreak. How does that work?
Yes, well, this emerged yesterday. It seems that there was a patch of floodwater on the original farm, a Wolfer's farm at least, and investigators are looking at that as one possible area that from which the disease may have been transmitted to cattle. It's not exactly clear how that would have happened, but I spoke yesterday to Professor Hugh Pennington, who's an expert microbiologist at Aberdeen University, and he speculated that if flooding was the cause, it would be likely perhaps that it would be the result of a failure in treatment of effluent coming from the Purbright site, which would have to have some kind of virus left in it, which would then somehow get into the water system and end up on the farm in that way.
And the government's under pressure today to close paths within this protection zone.
Yes, this is something that farmers have been talking increasingly about, this concern that footpaths within the protection zone are still open. And I think it's a difficult question, because the government don't want to give the impression, as in the 2001 outbreak, that the countryside is closed for business and put pressure on possibly on tourism and that sort of thing. It looks much more shocking if everything's closed down and you can't get in. But at the same time, farmers are saying, that this really is something that might need urgent action. And I think it's the case that so far in this, people have broadly been been saying, you know, the government have been doing a good job. They put a national movement ban in place immediately, which wasn't done in 2001, and that, you know, Gordon Brown's handling this very well. And here maybe is the first sign of, apart from the Purbright problem, the first sign of something to do with the reaction, that maybe there's some criticism coming out on this.
Rachel, many thanks.
Why are there medical records and blood samples in real estate files?
Would you mind if I investigate this a little further?
What makes you think you can just walk in there and find what we need?
You're a lawyer?
Hell no. I hate lawyers. I just work for them.
We're going to have to spend a little time filling in the holes in your research.
Don't talk to me like I'm an idiot, okay?
I think we got off on the wrong foot here.
That's all you got, lady. Two wrong feet and ugly shoes.
That's from the Hollywood film Erin Brockovich. Julia Roberts won a Best Actress Oscar for her portrayal of the woman who, without any formal legal training, won hundreds of millions of dollars in compensation from a power company that allegedly contaminated drinking water in Hinckley in Southern California. Well, now the real-life Erin Brockovich has taken on a new case. Barbara McMahon is The Guardian's correspondent in Sydney. I asked her to tell us what's happened to the residents of Yarloop in Western Australia.
Yarloop is a tiny little community in the west of Australia, and for 11 years the residents say they've been plagued by ill health, and some of the symptoms they say they experience are breathing problems, skin rashes, nosebleeds, blackouts, chronic fatigue, and even some cancers.
What evidence is there that their illnesses are a direct result of pollution from the mining giant Alcoa, which owns the local refinery there?
Well, that's what they're trying to assess at the moment and to gather evidence of this. Basically, they say that since Alcoa, the refinery, moved into the area, all these health problems have surfaced. They say that it's incredibly obvious that the town is blighted by pollution. They can actually smell it and see it at all hours of the day and night. The company has in the past addressed some of their concerns, they say, and in fact they have bought up some properties that are closest to the refinery, but the people who are complaining are the ones who are left.
Now, how did Erin Brockovich get involved?
Well, remarkably, somebody emailed her and she replied. They'd obviously heard about her campaigning stance and her very successful case, which resulted in the Julia Roberts film. And one of the women who lives in Yarloop emailed her, and she replied, and she said she would look into it. This was about a year ago, we think.
And since then, she's visited Perth. She won't actually visit Yarloop itself because she's worried about the effects on her own health. But what effect has she had on their campaign?
Well, I think she's re-energised it. I mean, this campaign has been going on for some time. They're a group of residents who are very vocal, and they've certainly had a lot of press in the local newspapers. But now that Erin Brockovich is involved, it's brought the whole problem to worldwide attention, and they're completely thrilled. They think this is the break that they've been looking for, and that this may embarrass Alcoa into taking them seriously and making them some kind of an offer.
What is Alcoa saying about it?
Well, Alcoa say that the refinery has been subject to some of the most stringent health and environmental standards in the world, that it's completely safe. They've had independent scientific tests on it, and they say that they've got nothing to hide. They will take a very responsible approach to any concerns that the public will have, and they'd be happy to meet with Ms. Brockovich to brief her on any matters that may be of interest to her.
That's Barbara McMahon in Sydney. Today's edition of News Desk was produced by Ian Chambers and Phil Maynard. I'm John Dennis. Thanks for listening.
Guardian Unlimited.